Yes, hello, come on in, sit down, stand up. I don't care how you take the show in. It is time once again for Less Than Jays. We are back. Don't really have a reason we didn't do podcasts last week.
We just didn't feel like it.
Just plum didn't. You were in between shows. You were resting. I was exhausted. My son just was especially tiring, as they sometimes are. And just plum skipped it. And a bunch of stuff sort of, I don't know. It's hard to say. Middle of the season, like a bunch of stuff happens, but also nothing happens. You know, I guess getting no hit by the Detroit Tigers counts as something happening.
I feel like last week was actually a perfect summation of the season so far, both in terms of reality and also in terms of sort of fan opinion and also my opinion of the team, in the sense that it sort of felt like they were awful all week and everything is sort of falling apart. And then you look at it, it's like, oh, they went 5-1.
Yeah, it was a 5-1 road trip. The one was a no-hitter, or zero. I've been calling it a zero-hitter because I think a no-hitter is an individual thing. But yeah, swept the White Sox and 2-3 against the Tigers. It wasn't the prettiest 2-3. They did finally have the big beat-em-up 12-2, and then they got zero hit. And then squeaked it out in extras as Danny Jansen saved the season once again. But yeah, you know... I wonder if we're in different places in terms of, I mean, obviously, physically we are, as you are in Orillia, Ontario, and I'm in Kitchener at this point. I wonder if we're in different places, though.
They're not that different places, really, in Kitchener, I feel. I think there's probably a similar vibe.
They're different, yeah, okay.
Physically, yeah.
Physically, we are in different places. But your point is well taken enough that I won't bother debating it. I wonder if we're in different places on the aspect of the team, because I have started to fall off the deep end into, I think they're a team of destiny, and now I think they're going to win the American League East.
I'm going to, spoiler alert for the rest of the show, we are absolutely in different places.
The way that they are losing and the way that they, how strangely so many things happen in the first half, like the basically unprecedented, a guy goes from a Cy Young runner-up to a FCL League guy, your guy who is wins the home run derby goes a month without hitting a home run. So many things, you know, Matt Chapman looks bad defensively to start the year. Kevin Kiermaier is a hitter. Brandon Belt turns into like the most important, you know, Belt and Biggio have the top Junes on the team. All these weird things sort of happen. And yet here they sit in the wild card spot. And, you know, we've made our feelings known that wild card is not the goal. They're 7 back of Tampa Bay, who has slid considerably. 5 back of Baltimore, who are paper champion absolute frauds. I look at it and I see a Tampa Bay team that isn't that good, that had a great start. I see a Baltimore team that hasn't had anything bad happen to them all year long. And I think the Blue Jays are poised. They've had so many weird things happen. They've had so many weird ways to lose. They've had so many things where, like, if they just had a little bit of power, all the guys they were getting on base would be a difference. And they are getting it done with pitching and defense, as we thought they would. It's not that not as much fun to watch. But my point being, I think this team is poised to make a run in the second half, and I refuse to relent on that until mid-September, I think.
I mean, I think where we differ is not necessarily on their position and ability to make a run. I think where we differ is how seriously we should take them. Like, to me, to overuse a meme... To me, this Blue Jays team is the Logan Roy succession, I love you, but you're not serious people, to me. And I feel like that argument is like a tiny bit. I think it's an interesting argument because it's let down by certain numbers, and it's also supported by other numbers.
Right.
And I think that's appropriate for this Blue Jays team, that we haven't really known what to make of them from the jump. And, you know, you look at the run differential that is now up to plus 34, which is great comparatively, but also a lot of that is inflated by a couple of big wins.
It's like I can pick out 34 runs over two games, but that's, listen, such as any team can do that. Any team can do that.
The bullpen feels like a waking nightmare at all times, and yet, as a team, their underlying numbers are top 5 to 8 in the league.
This is the Tim Mesa is the bullpen, right? It's like,
yeah.
I know you're an anti Mesa guy. It's like he maybe is the best left-handed reliever in baseball right now.
You know, there's the fact that, yes, they are 5 back of the Orioles and 7 back of the Rays, but they're also only 1 game up on the Yankees and 2 games up on the Red Sox. There's the fact that they're like, I have to find it now. They are, I'm just doing quick math in my brain, they are 27 and 14 against the American League. If you want to extend that to interleague, they are 43 and 21 against the non-AL East, and they are 7 and 20 against the AL East.
I love this crazy, frustrating team. I love them. I can't even say their weirdness and frustration. My brain is oozing over it, but I'm starting to like.
I think it can be both. I think
coagulate.
I think the thing that's holding me back from joining you in the Team of Destiny world is that I just don't really like this team that much. Like, their frustrations on the field aside, like, they're just not a particularly fun team. Like, they are built to not be fun actively and to do the little things right, but they do most of the little things wrong. And, like, it's a lot of really bad base running, really awful, awful approaches at the plate. The starting pitching is really the only thing you can even sort of feel good about. Maybe you can add Bo Bichette in there. Maybe you can add Tim Mesa in there. But like, just not. I've yet to find, from a fan perspective, I've yet to find that thing to latch on to. As like, I love these guys. Also, the
to
fact
which
that,
I would,
like,
yeah, sure.
Watch it,
which I would, like, sort of say exactly, right?
Yeah. Right?
All these things aren't working, and yet,
yes, right?
And yet, I think that's sort of my point. Is like, if your frustration is that they are underperforming, then logic follows they are due to perform, and when they do perform, we should expect incredible things. Listen, they're ninth in the American League.
It's
in
the
home
way
runs.
They're underperforming, is what
sure.
I would say.
It's to me, it's like if they had hit for any power at all right now, they would be looking so incredibly good because they're a top 5 in the AL OBP. You know, they're 6th in OPS, and that's with no power. That's with just absolutely. Dregs sort of looking at the home runs.
Hilariously, as you say, they're 6th in OBP, did you say?
The 5th in OBP, 6th in OPS, because the slugging drags it down.
6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. And they're 14th in runs scored.
Incredible. Like, it's incredible.
They make no sense.
And it lines up with what we're seeing, right? Is they're getting on base, they're getting these opportunities. And yet, it's the cashing in, and you sort of, you know, maybe it's going to come around. I believe in, you know, this is maybe your pet peeviest of pet peeves, but I believe in the ability to add a fourth outfielder coming up in the next couple of weeks. I believe in the ability to add bullpen arms, and the question of if they even need to add another pitcher. Is nothing. Nobody's ever had too much pitching, but I'm just saying it's not a crazy, like, Vlad hits for a little bit of power coming up. We have a bit of a bounce back from Alejandro Kirk, who is, like, maybe the most important hitter in the second half. And for all the things they do poorly, right, they have the best outfield defense in baseball through basically any metric you want to look at. Kiermaier and Varsho defensively have been incredible. Bo has been not a major negative at shortstop. Matt Chapman has been a very good third baseman after a shaky start. They are doing the defensive things right and helping their pitchers, and their pitchers are helping them. Other than the Manoah blowups, you've had a bounce back from Berríos. You've had exactly what you want from number five in Kikuchi. You've had very good Gausman and absolute, you know, very good to great stints from Bassett. You're looking pretty good on that end. And you have, I mean, we have the Ryu, we have Chad Green coming back. There's a lot of reason I see for just a little bit of clicking. I'll say this. I hate that I'm going to do the once again, like, and I even railed against this the other day about, like, we don't need to hold up 2022 as this incredible accomplishment or 2021 even. But it'll just take a couple things clicking, I think, for this to all work the way it is. And I'm trust me, I am hearing myself say these things and being like, you hate all of these talking points, but I'm starting to believe them. I'm just starting to believe that, like, everything you laid out there, it's like, man, if they had any bounces at all against the American League East, we'd be sitting here and saying they're four back of Tampa right now, right? It's like it's three games that much where it's like they would be right there in the pecking. And I guess the real question is like, do you believe that they are underachieving, or is it a classic Bill Parcells? Your record is who you are. Your wins and losses say who you are, and that is the truth. Do you believe they're an 89 win team, or do you think this is a 95, 96 win team waiting to have their run? Because again, I did this last year and I hated myself for it, and I was like, we're not going to do this again, but it still feels like they haven't, even when they do go on the little runs, like they went 5-1, it feels like they haven't had that, like, 3 weeks where they are an absolute machine, even though the wins and losses would tell you that they sort of kind of have a couple of times. It hasn't been 11 straight, but it's been four here, one there, four here, one there, a couple times. 7-1, the Houston and Milwaukee and New York, and the most recent 5-1 road trip. I know it's frustrating, but I feel as positive now, which is very strange, as I have any other part of the season.
I think what, other than the fact that I find them incredibly not fun, I think what's frustrating the most is that in many ways, as you said, it's the same old story. In yes. many ways, it's July 11th, going to just about pass the deadline, or pass the All-Star break, sorry. And it's still we'll see what they can do at the deadline conversation. And it's also not only the what can they do at the deadline conversation, it's the, they just need to go on a run, and then everything's fine. And we talked at the beginning of this year about how wouldn't it be nice if they were just good for once and not having to do the whole go on a run thing, which if that's what they have to do, because that's where they are now, certainly preferable to not. But I think what bothers me about the team, other than, like, the unknowns, is two things. One, that they are, like, still on July 11th, we're still in the playing the best case, worst case game that we were at the beginning of the year. Because there is, like, a very clear best case scenario here where they could, in the next couple weeks, turn into a very good team. You know, if mm-hmm. Manoah's comeback is real against more than just the Tigers, if Ryu comes back and is anything resembling useful, I'm not even saying he has to be the Hyunjin Ryu of old, but just anything close to useful, if Chad Green comes back and is useful, then all of a sudden they have some pitching depth, then all of a sudden they have a bullpen, then they can focus on adding some bats at the deadline, which they sorely, sorely need, any ways you look at it. But, and if that all happens, if, then yeah, this is like a legitimate contender team. My issue is, one issue I have is the ifs, and there's just so many of them again, which I just think philosophically is a shitty way to build a team. That being said, if it works, I mean, whatever.
Of course.
But I hate it. And the other thing is that, like, I just don't like watching them at the plate. I was having a conversation this week with our friend Chris Lund, who, of course, was more than happy to pull up some numbers for me and just to share some with you. And I will caveat this with, like, result obviously dictates the success here, but still worth pointing out. The Blue Jays are fifth in baseball in first pitch swinging strikes.
Wow.
They are second last in 3-0 count seen between the Nationals and the Rockies. They are basically bottom 5 to 10 in every ranking for being in any hitters count. They strike out a lot. Chapman is 6th in strikeouts looking. The only one, oddly enough, who sort of goes against this narrative is the craziest of them all, which is Bo Bichette, who happens to lead baseball in foul ball strike percentage.
Ooh.
And is good at dragging out at-bats as anybody in the league. The other thing, and again, this you would hope would be fixed at the deadline, is the 26-man issue, which has been present all year. Nathan Lucas getting the hit to win the game the other night is a lovely story. But, like, it's just not... Again, it's just the you're not serious people conversation once again. And so I've not given up hope on this team, and obviously winning cures everything. And if they were to go on a real run, then all of my negative feelings towards them melt away pretty fast, if we're being honest. But they're a frustrating group, and I don't know what to make of them. And it's not like previous frustrating Blue Jays teams, which everyone loves to jump to be like, this is just like that year, but it's not. Because even the worst of those good teams had an identity at some point, and I still don't feel like this team does. And I feel like I'm repeating myself a bit, because I feel like we've talked about this. But they
pitching
just,
and defense. Pitching and defense.
But, like, they don't... The defense isn't that great. The pitching's been good, but they... The offense is just so ugly, and it just feels... I don't know. It's not a team that's scoring a bunch of runs and just getting unlucky. It's a team that's winning a lot of 2-1 games and losing almost as many. And maybe that's enough in this new MLB. And if it is, if it is, great. Power to them. Obviously, I prefer to watch playoff baseball than not watch playoff baseball. But as we've said before on this show, just planning or hoping to sneak in and see is just not what I enjoy. Now, obviously, since we've last talked, the division is... I'm not going to say within striking distance, but certainly a lot more possible than it was whenever we last did a show. But I don't know. They just don't. They're not doing it for me yet. And there's a lot of things I see that I worry about that I don't think are easy patchwork fixes.
Sure.
Mostly on the offensive side of the ball, to be fair.
I see it. All of you had numbers ready for me. I'll say defensive runs saved by position. Blue Jays have 23 defensive runs saved in their center fielders, 14 from Kiermaier, 9 from Varsho. That's 1 and 2 in the league. In the outfield, 27 defensive runs saved. That's number one by 12 over the Padres. Second in catcher DRS. Number one in third base DRS is Chapman. The ones that are good are very, very good. Bo has been he's plus one, so it's like he's right at the league average. And I would agree with that. It sort of seems like he there's been a couple things, but for the most part, everything has been fine. Minuses in right field, first base, and second base, but that's not so bad. All things considered, but I see the routineness of the defense can sometimes sort of not pop. It's part of the reason why it's been such a weird year to watch. We'll have to do this. In a coming week. I was thinking we'll do a little tour around. We'll try to find our specific trade targets in the coming weeks, not this week. We don't have the prep done, but we do want to do a little bit of grades at the halfway point. We'll do it all encompassing. I'll throw out the big ones. We don't have to do the whole thing. We'll do that after this. All right, Jake, some impassioned beginning to this show. I appreciate it. I appreciate the fired up. It's hard because the worse they look, the more I believe, if that makes sense.
so broken.
Yes, I think they are a little broken.
Oh, I'm sorry. I meant you are broken.
Yes. No, they've a little bit broken my brain.
Oh, yes. Okay.
No question. Them getting no hit, I was like, yes, this is the team. This is the year. Then barely winning 2-3 against the Tigers. Like, yes, let's get it.
The getting no hit. We've talked with this a couple times in the past, but the idea that you know, in a championship season, there's always little moments throughout that are built into the larger narrative, and getting no hit by the Tigers or zero hit by the Tigers felt like the opposite of that.
As my friend Johnny would say, it's the first scene in the World Series DVD.
These kids are poisoning you.
maybe that's true. We'll talk about the starting pitching. So how are you grading out? I know you were effusive in your praise with it. I would be giving this, you know, Manoah notwithstanding. It's A minus for me in terms of. You feel good about most of the days of the week. We've stopped looking through our fingers for Jose Berríos. Yusei Kikuchi is giving us what we expected. Gausman has been great more often than not, as has Bassett. I grade this out as an A-. Where do you put the starting pitching?
Yeah, I think A- is right. I think it. I mean, just the fact alone that it went from, you know, the big potential biggest weakness of the team and the thing that we thought was going to cost the most games to really the only thing that's kept them in the hunt this long. I think you have to grade it out well. Again, Manoah notwithstanding, but like Gausman has been unbelievable, like Cy Young level, unbelievably good. A joy watching him pitch. I am always back and forth on Chris Bassett, but I think you have to grade him out on the positive end at the end of the day, even though there's been some struggles lately. On the whole, I think he still grades out well. And then Berríos, I mean, it's unbelievable the turnaround. And again, another thing that's sort of emblematic of the team, of just like, I don't even know what to make of him. Especially in the fact that like his numbers are like fine, like they're not even particularly outstanding. They're not as good as they were earlier in his career, but they're just so much better than last year that he feels like a new guy, basically. And you know, as we said at the beginning of the year, as the fourth guy, he's been great. You know, Kikuchi has been basically league average, but again, he's the fifth starter, so you kind of are fine with it, and he does his job and does exactly what you need him to do. Chris Bassett is low-key also been kind of league average on the whole.
Especially recently.
But, you know, they've been good enough, and they haven't let the struggles on the other side of the ball be as costly as potentially they could have been. So you have to give them. I might go a little lower than you. I might go to like a B plus or a B.
Sure.
But like they have to get a positive grade.
Vladimir Guerrero Jr., just 274, 787 OPS. The OPS is 63rd, 13 home runs, that's 58th. And yet his OBP is 5% higher than it was last year. His batting average is exactly the same as it was last year. Just there's no power. The ground balls have been back. He continues to ground out a whole ton. The wins above replacement, not so great, as the defense is grading out as a minus overall. I'm saying it's going to be a big second half for Vladdy. But where do you grade out your batting or your home run derby champion, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., through the first half of the year?
I mean, it feels kind of funny to say this about a guy who's OPSing almost 800, and his OPS plus is 120, and he's sort of the team leader. And as you said, his average is up and his OBP is up. But I feel like you have to give him like a C minus so far.
It's just so frustrating. He's emblematic of like, it feels like if Vlad was hitting, they would be the best team in the American League. Just sort of like, just does feel that way, whether that's fair or true or not.
Yeah, I think I agree. And I think, and it's been clear the last couple weeks, like when he's hitting, they're better, like full stop. And, you know, you want to start the narrative and hope that a good home run derby pumps him up the second half, which I don't think is true, but like
grasping for anything I can get my hands on.
But like, I think because of who he is and his place on the team and his importance on the roster, on and off the field, and just him being, you know, capital T, capital G, the guy, I think you have to grade him out to like a C minus.
I think that's fair. What about Bo Bichette? A boatload of hits, 122 hits, the most we've ever seen a Blue Jay have at the All-Star break. Has been a acceptably good defensive player, hitting .317. He has 15 home runs. His OPS is .842. That's 30th in baseball. Where do you have our star shortstop?
I mean, I said before the season, if Bo could learn to play defense, he'd be a $300 million guy. And I think he's been good enough to sort of back that defensively. Like, as you said, he's acceptable. He's not the best defensive shortstop in the world. And because of his narrative, every mistake he makes is magnified by 20. But, I mean, at a certain point, you have to, you know, how I stopped worrying and learned to love Bo Bichette kind of thing. And just like, at a certain point, you have to be like, oh, he's leading in hits again.
Yes.
Like, potentially for the third straight year, could lead the American League in hits. And at a certain point, you just got to accept that, I think. And be like, we have our shortstop just hits, and that's what he does.
And like, does he ever? Yeah.
And like we said earlier, even though his approach looks insane, he is number one in foul ball strikes and extending at bats and making pitchers work, which not a lot of guys on this team do. And, you know, you can't even quibble with the power, really, because he's leading the team in home runs.
You know, yeah.
You can quibble with the fact that 15 maybe shouldn't be leading the team in home runs, but end of the day, he is. And I think Bo has to grade in like as an A or an A plus. Like, he's been, I shudder to think where this team is without Bo Bichette this year.
Yeah.
Which is not a sentence I expected to be saying in April.
I'm very proud of you for admitting it's a sign of growth. I'm with you. I think it's an A. I think there haven't been many games, period, where it's like, man, he really thrown away his at-bats today. He's just been on everything every day, coming at it day in and day out with a guy that, not focus, but consistency was the only thing we asked for, and he's delivered that. What about Matt Chapman, a guy that, you know, you couldn't possibly have had a better April, and now he's got triple-digit strikeouts. The OPS is still .807. The defense has caught up after a shaky start. Boy, he strikes out a lot and he looks at a lot of strikes. Would have been My dad would be in and out on Matt Chapman more than anybody else in the history of baseball. with the called strikes and the swinging through strikes, it would not have gone well. Where do you grade out a guy like Matt Chapman, who has been as high and as low as you can get, I think, this year?
I mean, I think Matt Chapman, this is just sort of who he is, right? Like, he's always struck out a ton. He struck out 202 times in 2021. He's on pace to strike out basically that this year. He struck out 170 times last year. And it was always kind of like, oh, okay, he's not the best offensive player in the league, but, like, his defense is elite, so it makes up for it, especially at third base. And, you know, to start the year, he was sort of the inverse of that, in that his defense was okay, and his offense was unbelievable. And now it's sort of both are balancing out basically to kind of where he's always been. And I think that's... So, like, I guess you have to give him a B-, because, like, he's Matt Chapman. You know what I mean? Like, it's just... he's the same guy he was when we got him last year. He's the same guy he was in Oakland. He's somehow both overrated and underrated. His batting average is 30 points higher right now than it was at the end of last year. His OBP is up. His slugging is up. His OPS Plus is up. You know, obviously a lot of that is massively inflated from April. I'm sure if you graded that out over the last couple of months, it's far lower. But now he's starting to sort of balance out again, and I think he's just, you know, Matt Chapman has always been except for that one year, his second year in the league, he's always sort of been, like, a good hitter, not great, with an elite defense, and that's kind of what he is. So it's hard for me to give him anything too high or too low, because it's kind of what I expect from Matt Chapman.
1150 OPS in April, 585 in May, 633 in June, and 1,000 so far in July, where he already has two home runs in 26 at-bats. I would probably also lean B-, maybe C+, just because when it's been bad, it's been bad for 200 at-bats, and he was good for 100 at-bats. If that makes sense. But the defense has picked up, and that has helped quite a bit. We don't have to do every single guy here. Give me your outfield thoughts in general, then. We'll lump together the Varsho, Kiermaier, Springer.
Well, that doesn't feel fair to Kiermaier and Springer. I mean, you have to give Kiermaier an A. He's brought all of the elite defense you thought he would, and he's actually hitting the ball. Springer probably grades out a little lower. He stayed healthy, which for him is a huge accomplishment, even though he looks like he's going to shatter into glass every time he dives for a ball or swings too hard at a pitch. But, you know, his numbers, it's not, you know, George Springer numbers that you expect, but it might be George Springer numbers that you should expect from a 33-year-old who's been severely injured for like 5 years. Mm-hmm. You know, last year was the most games he's played since 2018, and he only played 133. So he's on pace to eclipse that this year. Offensive numbers obviously down, though not as down as you might think. His batting average is actually 2 points higher than it was last year. Through everything else is significantly lower. But yeah, I think Kiermaier and Springer sort of balance each other out. You expect more offense from Springer and less from Kiermaier, but Kiermaier is sort of giving you more that balances out. They're both above league average at the plate this year. Both bring very good outfield defense. So I think they both balance out to a solid, like, if Kiermaier is an A and Springer is a B, kind of got to give him a B+ between the two of them. Varsho, I know the defense is great, but the offense is just so bad.
He's Colby Rasmus, for better or for worse.
Yeah, but like for worse though. Like, he's of the guys who actually play a lot, he is the second worst offensive player on the team. That is behind guys like he's just ahead of Kevin Biggio at the plate. He has the same. He is basically the same offensive numbers as Nathan Lucas
this year. I think I give the whole group a B. I would be remiss if I didn't mention that Kevin Kiermaier has 11 hits in the last 30 days. Since the beginning of June, he's scored 8 runs and has 11 hits. It's cooled off quite a bit. 492 OPS.
He was hurt for a bit though.
He was a little creaky, a little banged up. They can't afford to put their defensive players on the IL for even a sliver of time. So be it. We understand that going into it. That was how it's going to be. I understand that. This is exactly what I expected to happen to Dalton Varsho. That he would become the some people just can't stand him sort of thing. Did have a decent June. OPS of 765. Hit 4 home runs. He's mostly had the power. He's as much power as Vladdy, if that helps you at all. But yeah, the strikeouts, the at-bats can feel non-competitive because he has that hole in his swing, and if pitchers can find it, they sure can exploit it. Also, it's in a 100-point drop in OPS, as you were rightfully pointing out. It's not like it's a small thing in a almost a 35-point drop. Not an almost, exactly a 35-point drop in OBP. He has been significantly behind the pace of last year. So an understanding there. And of course, 26 man is what it is. What about the bullpen? I feel like you mentioned they're more or less top 5. I don't remember a ton of meltdowns. I don't remember a ton. Like, there's obviously been a few, but not so many that affect my well-being for an extended period of time.
I'm going to lead this off by saying that I fucking hate this bullpen.
You hate the bullpen. I think that's like a overarching.
Build a better one. Build one that has better stuff and isn't all the same guy. But my opinions on the bullpen aside, I think you have to give them a B+, just by numbers alone. I don't like it. It doesn't make me feel good. But Trevor Richards has been outstanding, which is not a sentence I thought I would say. Romano has been pretty good, save for a couple bad games. Swanson, was unbelievable and now seems to be fine. Jimmy Garcia has been pretty bad, but still has his moments to the point where you're not, it's not Tyler Chatwood coming in. Tim Mesa, as you pointed out, might be the best lefty in baseball. The ascent of Nate Pearson has been a joy to watch. Basically, you can say good things about everyone except for Adam Simber, Mitch White, and of course, fuckhead Anthony Bass. Other than that, even Jay Jackson has come in and been fine in his 7 innings. Zach Pop was good before he got hurt and then also may also be a homophobe. Bowden Francis, I've actually really enjoyed watching. Or Bowden, I don't know how to pronounce his super white name. But I think despite my collective feelings on them, you have to give them a B+. And the numbers actually somehow back that up.
3.63 ERA from the bullpen, that's 5th in baseball. 10.02 strikeouts per 9, that's 5th in baseball. 26.7 K percentage, that's 3rd. In baseball. Echo most of your thoughts. It feels like a B because there is room for improvement, but aside from the longer guys as you mentioned, and maybe some of the construction on not having a long man when they didn't have the Manoah time, it's been pretty good. Richards has been very good. Jimmy's been slowly crawling back together, but Swanson had a great run where he was pretty incredible. He's getting used an awful lot though, as has Romano and Mesa, so I think some deserving Bs there, weighed down by the horribleness of the ones that were bad in every single way. That's a good recap for the first half of the year.
I think so.
And of course, Jake, everybody would love to know what you thought of the Jays draft. So if you want to give us a quick 10 minutes on,
I saw that the guy they got in the first round was high on the big board. So I look forward to them not developing any of them into major league hitters.
The Blue Jays draft pick, it's my favorite stat so far. Blue Jays draft pick this year was in grade 5 for the bat flip.
Well, I hate that a lot.
9 years old. for the bat flip, born October 16th, 2005. We're coming up on a Blue Jays, on a draft pick being younger than my Twitter account, which is not a good sign.
That's not good at all.
Something to sleep with tonight before you put your head in the pillow. That is it. We're going to take a quick break. We'll get a little off topic here in a minute and then answer your mailbag questions after that.
Baseball, get out of here. It's time to get off topic. Baseball, get out of here. It's time to get off topic.
All right, mailbag question was put out on Twitter at Less Than Jays. You know what to do, and that is to reply to the tweet with questions. We will get into it. We begin with Andrew Robertson asking us about the daily Immaculate Grid. Jake, are you playing the Immaculate Grid every day?
You know, I did when I first saw it popping up, and then after the third day, I was kind of like, you know, I don't think I need this in my life.
And yes, fair enough.
I stopped. I'm not against it. I like seeing people's posts about it.
Yeah,
but just I have enough daily annoying games that I play. On the internet.
It would be weird to be against it. It would be weird to be like against it.
I mean, I feel like there's like a backlash against like Hurdle or Wordle people and stuff. So.
People are so fucking stupid. People.
They really are.
Anyway, Andrew Robertson asked us: when you ace the daily Immaculate Grid, do you feel like a very smart baseball historian or a sicko who can recall too many baseball transactions and facts? Mine, actually, Andrew, is a secret third option. I feel like a fucking moron every day. I'll tell you this, a little known secret. I never, ever aced the Immaculate Grid. Ever. I think I've done it once.
I never have. I will say that right now.
I play every day. I think I've done it once. I'm just not very smart. I have really bad, and I admit this. I can admit this now that I'm not an industry professional. I'm pretty myopic nowadays with my, like, it's Jays or not much for me. I'll check in on other teams and I see highlights, but, like, when it's, like, who played for the Rockies and the Diamondbacks, I'm like...
Yeah, I'm with you.
You might as well ask me to recall somebody else's dream. I don't know. I wasn't there. I don't care. Who played for the fucking Cleveland... And also the Mets, like, pfft. Other than Lindor, I got no clue, man. It has to have, like, literally, this is how stupid I've come with this. The trades have to have happened in the last, like, 2 years or I am toast. I'm just not good at it.
I'm finding I'm weirdly much, I find the stats ones much easier.
100%, because, like, you can pick easy ones. And I'm in a group, listen, we were both in group chats with Baseball Freaks. People will be in there and they're like, I got a sub game where it's about who can get the rarest player and like who can get the rarest number of players and also who can have the highest combined total war in that low players. I'm like, I'm trying to get 7 of 9. If I get 7, I'm like, yeah, I'm doing pretty good today. You know what I do a lot also, because I'll say this, I cheat at the game is I will get as many as I can. I will go online and see what other people have posted and just take their answers and be like, yep, 9 out of 9. People every day are getting 9 out of 9. You're crazy talk. I'm just not that smart. I don't know.
No, me neither. I'm very dumb is the thing that a lot of people don't know about me. Or maybe actually that's a lie. Most of you probably know that.
Yeah, it was good for us for pretending that people don't know that we're stupid.
Yeah, you absolutely know that I'm dumb.
The count Seth asks us if the Jays somehow, here we go. This is a Jake question. If the Jays somehow fumble the middest wild card race of all time, that is true, and miss the playoffs completely, where do you go in the off season? Routes to meaningfully improve or even maintain this team look pretty few and far between. I mean, you look at outfield options, because the thing is, right, Kiermaier is up, Chapman is up, I think second base is up. I think you could probably survive another year of Biggio Espinal at second base, but it's got to be a trade route. It basically, like, with where they are and with the coming free agent class, it's got to be trade route, and maybe they address, maybe this coming trade deadline they get somebody who has 2 years of team control. It's going to be interesting. I think they're going to, until the Vladdy and Bo contracts come due, when all the pitchers they signed are out of contract. They're going to continue to try to retool and pick and choose. But I think it'll have to be a trade this offseason. It's just going to have to be.
I'm gonna go you one further here. Let's forget missing the playoffs completely. Let's just go to making any sort of meaningful run this year. I'm including losing in the wild card as missing the playoffs completely this year.
I agree with that this year. If they lose in the wild card, they didn't make the playoffs to me this year.
If that happens, I think you offer Vlad and Bo the world, and you blow it up, and you rebuild around them. Because they're both young enough that that's not, like, crazy to do. But, like, I feel like if they don't, quote-unquote, make the playoffs this year, I think you have to fire Atkins. I think you have to fire Schneider. I think you have to blow it up. Because if you don't, as correctly pointed out, the routes to meaningfully improving or maintaining next year is tough. And if this team, through this window, can't make the playoffs and make a run, I don't know if you're getting any better next year.
Now, what does blow it up really mean? Who do you mean by that? You mean the pitching staff? You mean Springer?
For the most part, I definitely mean Springer. I think you keep Gausman unless you can get a real haul for him, just because he is so good still that you need someone to anchor that squad. You hope Manoa bounces back and develops. I think you can probably... I don't know what the hell you do at the catching position. I don't know what you do at second base. I think you can jettison... I think you can trade Bassett. I think you can trade Kikuchi. Barrios is probably not going anywhere, just with that contract hanging over him. But who knows, depending on the rest of how his season goes. I think the bullpen you can take a real look at. You know, Richards is getting up there. You can dump Simber. You can definitely dump Jimmy because he's getting old. I think this is the last year of Ryu's deal. You know, maybe you look to build the bullpen around Nate, who's still somehow very young. I just think if it doesn't work this year, I just really get the feeling that this year is the last year of the window. You have George Springer's already.
My only thought would be a lot of that blow up. I don't know that you get a lot of.
I don't either.
Know that you get a ton for Bassett. I don't think you get a ton for anybody in the bullpen.
But then what?
Springer,
but then
probably not.
What's the option then? You just like win 84 games next year and.
No, I think
Springer's already 33 and is already declining. It's going to be 34 next year. Kiermaier, as you say, he's also 33 and is also up. You know, Varsho is clearly not a guy you can build an outfield around.
If they win 85 games, it's a point well taken. Just I think the point being that, like, their value on the team is probably going to exceed their value in the trade market.
Sure. Unquestionably. I don't think there's a move. Like, I just don't see the point of, like, I feel like if they don't get it done this year, they almost have to sell some of those guys for pennies on the dollar.
Sure. Okay. Next question comes from,
certainly the front office has to go.
Claro de la Cruz at Baseball Denier. I don't disagree with that either. I think if you miss the playoffs, that's got to be it for Atkins. Claro de la Cruz, the Baseball Denier, says, who are some players the Jays should pursue at the deadline? We'll go into this a little bit deeper a little bit later in the month as we get 1-2 weeks out of the deadline. But what I would be doing is you look at the teams that are definitely out of it. You're looking at your White Sox. You're basically looking for the next... for lack of a better term, this year's Whit Merrifield. You have a bad team that's not going anywhere with a guy that they don't really have any use for. You look at some of the White Sox, your Royals, and you look at their outfielders. Like, could you snag I don't even know. You know, you go out and get an expiring guy from one of those bad teams. You have the terrible Washington Nationals. You have the... it's probably nothing on the Nationals, but you have A's. Like, could you go get a Ramon Laureano? Could you go get Mark Canha from somewhere. Could you go get, one of those crappy White Sox players? Tim Anderson. What about Tim Anderson for you, Jake? He's been really noodle batted this year, but
I would love Tim Anderson. Oh man, that would make me very
Blake
happy.
Snell. Go get Blake Snell from the.
Yeah, I've seen that you are quite in on Blake Snell.
Well, James did the, like, you have to treat this like 2015. What's the big shocking upgrade that nobody expects? And it would be the Blake Snell.
The answer to that question is Juan Soto.
Tim Anderson managed to have zero home runs so far this season.
He'll fit right in.
OPS plus of 46. I don't know how
he's
that's possible.
He's already doing the thing.
521 OBP. What in the world has happened to Tim Anderson? That's crazy. 541. That's absurd. That's 100 points below Dalton Varsho. That's below Santiago Espinal by 50 points. What the hell?
That's crazy. A name that I don't think, certainly is in a position of need, but to me, and almost certainly will not get moved, but is intriguing to me based on his team situation and his contract situation, is you wonder if you can make a call to St. Louis about Paul Goldschmidt.
Holy.
He has 1 year left on his deal.
But that's the type of thing, yeah.
He has 1 year left on his deal after this year. He's still a great hitter. He's a piece of shit, but that also fits in with a lot of these guys. off the field, I mean. But, you know, he's a great hitter. He solves the DH issue, even though he does not solve the outfield issue. He won MVP last year, and the Cardinals are terrible. And he's 35 with 1 year left on his deal. So you wonder. I don't know. You wonder.
But Ryan Noda from the Athletics.
I don't mean to say this name again because we said it in the offseason as sort of a joke. But, you know, if you want to go and trade cash for a guy, Jurickson Profar is still right there playing major league games. He's bad, but he's better than a lot of the outfield options we have.
You could pick up the phone again for those Cardinals, as you said. You could kick the tire on Lars Nootbaar and actually get him this time.
Hasn't been great this year, but yeah, definitely. I don't know if they have the assets to trade for him, but if we want to talk good guys on bad teams, you could make a Luis Robert Jr. call.
Sure.
You know, he's probably too good for what the Jays are willing to trade, especially with the, you know what, let's, instead of just talking players, because you're right, we're going to get into that later. I think what's more interesting with the deadline is what exactly does Ross Atkins think this team is?
Mm-hmm.
Because as we were just saying, that window is closing fast. And if he views this year as the last real kick at the can, which, as we just said, it might be, do you just push all your prospect chips in and go for a guy like Luis Robert, and not him specifically, but like a real massive, massive all-star upgrade to try and make this team win while they can? Or do you look at it and go, I don't know if this team is that good, and you don't want to get rid of your few remaining prospect chips? And then in that case, you're still sort of in this limbo. And I know what I'd prefer he does, but I don't think that's how he operates.
Another once again, where this guy, where we come in and they say we're not going to sacrifice a ton. And make that.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Or, you know, trade Vlad for Shohei.
Yeah, it is the opposite. There's the alternate one. James Nielsen, here's one. Recently saw a dashboard confessional open for Counting Crows at Casino Niagara. They even played two songs together. What's the weirdest pair of bands you've ever seen play on the same bill? And also, as a side question, does seeing bands from your youth play at a casino mean you're old now? The second part is absolutely it does.
Yeah, 100%.
If they're trying to get you into a casino, you are an old person.
I'm mad that we have a show on Wednesday next week. Because at Casino Rama here in Aurelia is the 1-2 punch of Gob and Papa Roach.
That's a crazy bill.
Which is a crazy bill. But unfortunately, we have a show, so I can't go. But weirdest bands I've seen together.
It's tough.
Yeah, this isn't so much weird in terms of sound, but like in terms of where they were in their careers. I saw like Weezer in like the depths of them being, before they sort of crested out into like ironically bad.
Right.
When they were just like straight up bad. I saw them and the Pixies together when the Pixies were still on their like reunion tour before they got bad.
Holy.
Which was a great show, but also like very odd crowd reactions all around for that one.
I haven't been to enough shows for to have seen a weird combo, I don't think.
I feel like
I saw Taylor Swift when she was like 16 open for Rascal Flatts. That's not a weird combination.
I feel like weird combinations now are almost appreciated.
It's the whole point, yeah.
Like seeing a weird act open for an established band, I think that's fun. I like it. So I don't know if it crosses my mind as being like a weird, like to me, Dashboard and Counting Crows aren't that weird a match. They're both sort of like nostalgia acts. They're nostalgia acts that lean heavily on acoustic instruments. It makes sense to me.
Yeah, that band, that duo was like, hey, I bet your back hurts.
Yeah, exactly.
Glenjamin asks, it's July 15th. That's Saturday, by the way. Seattle calls and says you can have Teo, but we want Swanson back. What do you say? I biased. Teoscar Hernandez is hilariously exactly what they need right now.
Yeah, although he... To the conversation we had earlier in the show about approaches at the plate, Teoscar leads all qualified hitters in strikeout rate by about 10%.
That's correct.
But he has as many home runs as Bo Bichette. So
maintains, yeah, and maintains his 30 and 100 as always.
Yeah, I mean, I'd probably say yes. He'd bring identity back, and you can always get another reliever.
It's been bittersweet as this all happens, watching Vlad like be so happy to see Lourdes Gurriel Jr. at the All-Star game.
And sure has. Sure
be
has.
FaceTiming Teoscar Hernandez in between his rounds. Poor guy. Poor kid. He's 24. We forget sometimes. Would I trade Swanson back for Vlad or for Teo? Probably. I would say no, only because like you got to hold Seattle's feet to the fire a little bit more and be like... No takesies, backsies. But in terms of what I want to Oscar Hernandez back, absolutely. Absolutely, I absolutely would. I'm not afraid to admit it.
Yeah, 100%. And like you say, he is pretty much exactly what they need.
Okay. Paul Adam asks, what's the best prank you ever pulled? Ooh.
I'm not really a prank guy.
Not a prankster? Really pranks?
We, in university, we wrapped guys we know everything in his bedroom in... tinfoil. That's pretty good. Oh no, I can't remember if it was tinfoil or saran wrap. Either way, it was like we wrapped everything, like bookshelf, desk, bike, clothes. Jeez. I think it was saran wrap. That was pretty fun.
Did a classic, held a roommate's door slightly ajar and then put a empty laundry detergent
jug on top of it. A classic, yeah.
So you pushed the door open and it fell and bonked him on the head. It was one of those ones where it's like it's nice and harmless, so it's actually very cute.
It makes you laugh a lot, I bet.
A little bonk. We laughed so hard. We were pretty high, but we laughed so hard. Some good fun. Did the same prank the next day with a like quarter full cup of water, like the smallest little trickling of water. He hated us pretty quickly after that.
I feel like the fact it's so small makes it way funnier.
That's what I figured as well. Like an ounce of water. Yeah. It's so stupid. And finally, I'll say this for the last, my favorite question in a while. Terry, Blackholm Terry, asks us, rate the following three items for how well Jake would do with them. Number one, drive to my place without a GPS. That's me as Zoobs. Take care of Zoob's son for 24 hours on his own. Or be a Major League Baseball third base coach. Number one, you, the third base coach, I trust you to do that way more than the other two when it's not particularly close.
I think that's fair. Number three is obviously drive to your house with the GPS because A, I don't know where anything outside Toronto is, and B, I don't know how to drive.
Yeah.
So that would be tough. So that's third for sure. I think one and two are closer than you think, though. I think I've learned is that I'm actually pretty good with kids. I just have no interest in having one.
Right. Which I will, classically say yes, but, of course.
Yeah, of course. 100%. I also, have never done, for 24 hours, I've never.
24 hours is
never attempted to do any of the things you have to do with a baby that aren't just.
But I will say, Sam is 15 months old. And if I gave you, not a list, but if I sort of laid out what you had to do, I think you could do it well enough. You just sort of let him run around during the day. Make sure he doesn't fall.
I definitely think I could figure it out for sure.
And he you just make the food and put it in front of him and he eats it, right? You're no longer you'd have to change him, but that's life. That's ball. But you put him down and he sleeps. You put food in front of him and he eats. It's not as hard as it would have been a year ago at this time.
Yeah.
So I think I would put. Yeah, I think I'd put third base coach first because it's. You get the fucking.
I'm not gonna lie. I'm pretty sure I could be a third base coach now.
You get a scouting report and you know who not to run on. Everything else is fine.
Yeah.
100%. And then I would put taking care of Sam second, and then driving to my house is a real danger to you and everybody around you.
No question that is third. But I maintain that first and second are closer than you'd think.
Not being able to drive does make that last part pretty difficult.
Yeah, I would kill a lot of people.
Anyway, that is that for another episode, the halfway point, the All-Star Game edition. Blue Jays are off Wednesday and Thursday. They return home to face Gabriel Moreno and the Arizona Diamondbacks at home Friday, Saturday, Sunday. What are we doing? Sunday, Tuesday, record. When are we recording next week, Jake? Do you even know?
Let's call it Tuesday again.
As they open up a series against the San Diego Padres, it's NL West time for the next six games, and then they head out west for some late games in Seattle and Los Angeles against the Dodgers. So, and then the Angels to close out the month. So, lots of West Coast teams coming in and going out. For the rest of July, we'll talk about that. Get you ready for the trade deadline, all that and more next time. We will check you then. And until then, thank you so much for being a part of Less Than Jays.